Good morning, Southern Arizona and the rest of you out there in cyberspace. Welcome to the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host. Along with me riding shotgun, Mr. Jim Mooney from Frontier Towing. He tows everything. Been there, done that, towed that. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, everybody out there in cyberspace. Thanks for listening this morning. Remember, live call-in talk show. So you call in, give our producer a minute to answer the phone. 520-719-1490. That's 520-719-1490. And remember, it's back again by popular demand. Super Safe Saturday. I know it. You're like, Super Safe Saturday again? I thought we just did that. You're right, folks. We just did it last week. We're doing it again this week. All right. So Super Safe Saturday means move over and slow down. When you're driving next to a vehicle that's broke down on the side of the road, move over for the bicyclists, dog walkers, and the pedestrians. I know that they may not have a flashing light, or maybe they do. Move over anyways. It's far better to do so. No drinking and driving, no texting and driving. I know, we see it all the time. Just stop it. No texting and driving, no drinking and driving. Drinking and driving gets you in a bad way. Texting and driving gets you in a worse way. You're working on your car, remember? Jack stands. If you're jacking it up, it's going to be a pretty nice day. A little cool out there. It's going to be a pretty nice day, though. It's good weather to work on it, especially if you're outside, you know, in the sun. Jack stand.
Yeah, where are you long hands?
Where your long hands? It's going to be 64, so it's doable today.
Oh, yeah? Well, it's got to climb up from minus zero out there right now.
it's not quite minus zero. It's a little chilly, but it's not too bad. Chalk your wheels to help keep it from rolling away. That's always a great idea. Put your keys in your pocket. Put your safety glasses on, folks. Start with your safety glasses. The very first thing you should put on before you walk to the car is put on your safety glasses. I know it's kind of a pain, especially if you're like me and you got to put readers on, but do it anyways. So use your hood prop. And if the wind's blowing, secure your hood some way or don't open the hood. Leave it closed because that is a big sail, and it will sail that thing will sail right away. Disconnect your battery if you're working on your electrical. No long hair or long sleeves and moving while running parts. Jerry's tip, which is always the best one, don't stand in front of the car if it's running, just in case it decides to jump into gear and take off. And folks, if you've never had that happen to you, that is probably one of the most unnerving things that you'll ever see. Car just starts moving, and you're like, wait, I'm not doing anything, and the way it goes. So it can be a little frustrating. Just let it go. I'm going to tell you.
It can
right
be
now,
a little scary, too.
It can be dang scary. If it starts rolling and starts moving, let it go. Take it from a guy who knows you cannot catch a vehicle. They are, you cannot catch one. You can try. Likelihood you're going to get hurt is pretty dang good. Trust me, I've tried. And let it go. There's no way around it. You're not going to, if you try and jump in, the thing's going to mow you over. So.
If you're gonna be a daredevil on something like that, I have actually dived through the window of a race car to stop it, and that's fine because the race car on the inside is a lot safer than on the outside. But when a vehicle goes into reverse, it depends on what the RPM, and if you've got a diesel or something that goes in, those diesels don't care; they just move right away. It depends on the position you are in to how much damage you're going to be in. If it runs into the side of your wall or something like that, yeah, after your deductible, you're going to you'll have it fixed. But these don't get between anything and that vehicle. Nothing. I don't
That's
care
right.
if it's a trash can. They'll stick that thing right up your hind end. Don't get Stay away from it. Jim's correct. Best thing to do is prepare for it.
That's right.
Go ahead, Jim.
That's right. That's why we say put the chocks down. Because, you know, if it's running and for some reason does go into gear, it's got to ride over the chalk. Okay? So over the chalk is at a stop.
The good chalks. The big rubber chalks. The one that,
not a 2x4. Not a 2x4 doesn't count as a chalk. Yeah, it will hold a car, but not for very long. It'll roll right over.
I've thrown
8x8 blocks in front of trucks and watched them roll right over the top of them. So, just if you have the chocks up tight when you start front and rear, it flows them up pretty good because it's got to get over that. So it's got to be running pretty high to get over the top of the chock. That's just a good safety thing.
Right.
So save you, your house, your car. So those are always good.
Jim, when they go down to buy these chocks, and they're inexpensive, the rubber blocks, get the ones that's got the little circular eye bolts in them. And then get you a string or a cord or something like that and just tie them both together, with about a 30-inch cord or something like that. That keeps the pair together. When you pick them up, you carry them out, you set them down on the car, it's a pair. The line is too short to go across to the other side by design. You put one in front of the tire, one behind the tire, and that's a proper way to chalk them. And that covers for the mental mistakes that you may make while you're in there and you think, okay, I got it chalked, but it's only chalked to go forward. So, and then you pull it back down and you forget that, oh, okay, I didn't get it quite to neutral. It's in reverse and you get ready to get out of the car and here it goes. That's the reason you put chalks in behind the tires.
That's right.
I mean, not that I've ever done that or anything like that, but...
Me either. Not that I've ever done it before.
No.
But you're absolutely right. Things go wrong. Things happen. People make mistakes, and it's not intentional. It just happens. If you're working on an old truck or you're working on something and the steering column is worn, and okay, it's a column shift, let's go with, and it doesn't exactly go into park, and the parking pole doesn't get engaged properly, it will roll away unless you set the brake. Oh, wait, I don't have ever adjust the parking brake on my car because I use park. So,
bingo. I love it when you hit the parking brake and it goes all the way to the floor with no resistance. Whoops. Or you pull the handle up all
there.
The way, no resistance. Oh, my gosh. It makes you a little weak. And how many people actually know that when you pull up and park a car against a curb and it's an incline, how do you park the car when you drive in and you park beside of a curb and it's on an incline? How do you park your car, Jim?
You turn your wheel.
Which way?
So if you're uphill, you turn your if you're pointing uphill, you turn your wheel so that the car will roll uphill, not downhill. So whichever the direction is you're facing, so it would be like to the left if you're up the hill, and it would go back uphill again, not
Bingo.
So it goes downhill.
Bingo.
So you don't want the car to roll away, because if you turn it so it goes downhill, it'll just roll down the hill. But if you turn it so it rolls, so it kind of rolls around the corner up the hill, it'll stop. Now, granted, it's not a perfect solution. There might be other things in the way for it to stop on, but you get them so you can turn them. if you back into the parking spot and you're on the hill, you turn them the opposite direction. So again, so it will roll up the hill. Same thing still applies. You turn them up so that the car goes. Uphill. So it will actually ride uphill. That's the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Instead of turning them in toward the curb so that when it starts to move, puts it back out in traffic. You don't want that.
Exactly.
You want it to stay on the curb. The only place I've ever had to use that was in San Francisco. Driving San Francisco, got on one of those hills, got out of the car and looked back at my old Mustang, and I said, seemed like I remember something in driver school or something about turning the wheels. I live in Tucson. You don't have a hill down here that you know to park on. And I had to sit there and go, okay. And it must have taken me a minute before I realized, okay, yes, this is the way you set your wheels. And so I said it. And I said, oh, I'm proud of me. But I hadn't thought of it since until just now. Yahoo! Uh-oh, well, light come on. Look out, world. We're fired up now.
And, you know, it's funny you say San Francisco, Jerry, because not normally when you think about parking, you think about parallel parking, right, on a hill. So that, like you said, you turn them so that it rolls into the curb, right? So, but in San Francisco, a lot of the cars park perpendicular to the uphill. They actually park along the, you know, along the it, perpendicular to the curb. So their wheels are turned so that if the car goes, it would actually roll up the hill because they because the hills are, I mean, it's San Francisco, they're steep, folks. If you've never been down, what is it, Lombard Street? I don't know if you can drive that anymore, but it is actually quite interesting little road to drive
probably
down
too
and
much
walk
garbage.
Down. But it's the windiest road. It used to be the windiest road that ever existed, but it's an interesting little road. Maybe what, I don't know, 0.2 mile long. Top to bottom is probably only 100 feet, but you got to do like 83 switchbacks before to get down to the bottom. But it's interesting.
You better have good brakes when you go down there.
Have good brakes. Last time I was there, there's an officer sits on top of the hill. But I don't know if you can drive down it anymore. They probably closed it. So.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because of the curves that you have to take to go down the hill. It's a great mountain road test for a very short distance. So it is kind of a little fun street to go through.
But that's only one of the hills. I remember riding a daggone streetcar down one of those things, and I thought, Lord have mercy, let me get to the entrance. I want to the door. That's where I want to ride so I can jump out when this thing takes off. But brakes, you know, let's talk a little bit about brakes. You know, there are so many things coming out now, and you got the automotive industry saying, I don't think this electric vehicle, all electric vehicles going to work too well. And so, Jim, they're just now, I guess they're figuring, okay, well, we've run across the first rush of people buying electric cars. And they don't seem to be too interested in it now because they still haven't got the infrastructure. And, of course, we're not unknown for patience. And so I think what we'll do, Toyota, all the manufacturers are now going to what? They're going to the hybrids.
Yeah, everything's going plug-in now, Jer.
They're going to the plug-in. They're going to a motor with electric vehicles, a motor and an electric vehicle. That's what I would have done originally because the infrastructure wasn't done. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. You just have to start looking for a place to plug that sucker in. And when you get there people look like a gas shortage piled up in the line when you're trying to get in. So, therefore, I think that the plug-in, the little hybrid, you know, like the Prius, you know, the Toyota, they're in what, the 9th or 10th generation of that little booger? And, you know, it recharges, yeah. It's fantastic. And then when you come in with electric, I'm going, that's fine, but, you know, it ought to come with the option with a trailer hitch on the hind end of it and a generator back there so you can charge it while you drive it. That would make sense to me, or a solar panel on top. I don't want much. I just want them to get it right. So
yeah, I don't have any problems with mine, Jerry. It works pretty good.
Uh-huh.
It actually drove me to work this morning. Tesla has a free month of full self-driving with their latest beta testing. It's a 12.3, I think, or something like that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll wait and see. I'm on the show. I'm from Missouri. Show me. And so far, they haven't showed me anything except a pain. And I like new things, too. I've watched electric cars from the time they started headed our direction. And then I go, and of course, everybody's going to try to, you know, most of this stuff is dollar driven. You get a new thing, you know, like cars, okay, like safety features in cars. You got to wait to about how many 100,000 people got killed before they ever tried to put seatbelts in them. So you look at it. And then the manufacturer said, well, if we put seatbelts in, that's going to increase the price of a car by $2. Who gives a crap? Evidently, the research showed that people didn't want to pay any more money for it. It's just like the government raising taxes. Nope, no more taxes, no more taxes, no more taxes until everything falls apart. Well, maybe you got to have some more taxes. But, you know, putting newfangled stuff in a car, they got so much stuff in a car. Now, in fact, I don't know. The only thing that I know they don't have in cars, they have them in motor on, but don't have them in cars, is bathrooms and coffee pots. That's the only thing they don't have in cars now. I mean, they got self-drivers that I don't trust because they've already proven that, you know, you can have a car that runs. If everything on the road were autonomous and everything had the same radars and the same technology in it so that these cars could identify each car and stuff like that, which is, I think, the original program that they're trying to get out. But when you got me out there and Jim out there and people walking across, jaywalking across the streets and stuff, and these cars are taking them out. Well, if you jaywalk across the street, you probably need to eliminate the gene pool. You know, it's sad to say, but, you know, you can't figure out. It doesn't have, that AI is not smart enough yet to see, okay, here's a person that looks like they're going to walk out in the road. Maybe I better put on the brakes. No, we'll just mop them up. We'll just go ahead and hit them, mop them up later, you know, because it's only a statistic anyway. So, yeah, I see a lot of problems with the new stuff, but I'm old enough, trust me, I'm old enough to have seen the stuff when it comes out. And you scratch your head, like when the first new design of the cars come out. I said, those things look like a door stopper. They don't look like a car. They look like a door stopper. And that's exactly what they look like. Well, until they all get out there and you're used to seeing them, you say, wow, you set up in them. And you can actually, your blind spots are pretty much eliminated depending on the style that you choose. And, hey, these things are pretty cool. They're short. They're easier to park. Turning ratio is better than it were. I mean, I remember having a 78 Ford Super Cab and long bed. You had to have four lanes to make a U-turn. And you go, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And then I had the 06 Dodge, 4x4, short bed, one ton, crew cab. I could go from one lane, turn right around the corner, right into the next lane. The only thing that had a better turning ratio was my Honda. And I thought, this is really good. And then I bought another 3/4 ton, 4x4, Dodge, 2018, and it don't have that same turning ratio. And that's the only thing that I don't like about that Dodge. I got spoiled by the other one that had the good turning ratio. This thing doesn't have that same ratio. And people say, oh, yeah, Jerry, you must be mistaken. No, I'm not. I put 200,000 miles on the other one. I know what I'm talking about. And so, you know, I guess you're going to have to mount one of those little tires on the front and put a drive shaft to it so that you can just stop it, hit the hydraulic, put the tire down, and then you turn it. I've seen it. I know it's there because I've seen it on Facebook.
Yeah, they have a car like that. They have a car that did that, and they stopped it for a while. But, yeah, the rear tire would drop, and it would completely flip around.
Sure, sure. And so, you know, they've got new technology. New technology is great. It comes out, but I haven't seen any new technology that didn't have a problem with it. I haven't, and not in my young lifespan, because everything that comes out, you know, look at the fires that used to be in a Ford product because the ignition switch. You turn the ignition switch off, park it in your garage, and then it would stay energized, short out, and burn the house down. And that happened more than one time, didn't it, Jim?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's any kind of electrical shorts are going to cause an issue. And with today there's all kinds of ignition issues, but those if you drive a Jeep Grand Cherokee, they got, I don't know, I think there's a massive recall. They won't shut off. you hit the start button to start and stop it, and it won't shut off, or it won't start on.
Oh, when did that come out? When did that recall come out? I haven't heard of that.
I don't know, but I bet I've towed 100 of them in the last 2 weeks.
So it's recent.
They won't start. Yeah, you get them in there, and you hit the little button, and they won't shut off. And
well, it's conspiracy theory. If you get enough of those cars that won't shut off like that, it'll burn the gas up, and then it'll cause more. You spend more money on gas, and then you go buy an electric hybrid, huh?
Well, could be. I think you're probably right, Jerry, because it's a security system issue. You know, so it won't recognize the button, like the fob. Even if the fob is present, it doesn't think the fob's present. It won't recognize the button to make it work, or something along that line is what I was being told. But yeah,
wow.
It won't shut off. You're right. It just burns up the gas. So if you won't shut off when you
keep
take
people
it
all
unit,
mad
it's running, well, do they put new gas in it when they're done, or do you get to buy? Do you have to go fill it up? Tow it to the gas station just to put gas in it. Have AAA come out and put a gallon in for you so you can get to the gas station. I don't know. But, yeah, there's ignition issues have been around forever, and they're going to be around forever because it's the thing we hit, with the exception of the door handle and the brake pedal, it's probably the thing we push the most, you know. We push it on, we push it off. Push it on, push it off. So.
Yeah.
And
well, you've got everything now is electric. You hit the accelerator, and it runs on a rheostat. To make it go, and if you aren't familiar with rheostats and stuff, people, have you got a light in your house that you have a button, and you just kind of slide it up and down, like you know like something over the fireplace or on the fireplace area, where you can actually control the brightness. That's controlled by a rheostat. Those little knobs in there actually wear out. They wear down. On a Dodge, i.e. Simmons's Dodge, I had a little problem with that thing one time. I couldn't accelerate. It didn't want to accelerate. It didn't want to run when I was running with my foot. You're just cruising down the road, and it seemed like it would lose power. You'd push it just like it had a plug fuel filter, and you'd push it down, push your accelerator down a little bit, then it'd come back to life. Well, you let it all the way down, take your foot off of it, cruise it down, yeah, idle fine. Then you accelerate up, it would accelerate up to a point. It turned out that stinking $300 piece under there that controls where the accelerator was and the location of it, the rheostat, that thing was worn out. You had to go past that little space where you normally drive because that's what wore out in it. And then once you get past that, it would pull fine. Well, the secret to getting back from the White Mountains with that dadgone thing was, one, if I hadn't have been talking to a Dodge expert that just lives and breathes Dodges, and he said, I know what that is. He says, when you get back to Tucson, you'll be all right. It'll run. He says, when you get back to Tucson, go down to Dodge. Don't go anyplace else. Go to Dodge and get your module. Put it in there, and that'll fix your problem. And I think, okay. And then the secret to getting back to Tucson is the RPM. RPM. Coming down a mountain, don't have to be a brainstorm. Don't take it down the mountain at 2,800 RPM because it's not going to cooperate very well. I mean, you're going to be flying. I drove it back knowing that I have to stay off of that little dead spot. So when you get down and you're running, if it looks like it's going to be dropping that RPM back to that dead spot, you just kick down the gear. Kick it down a gear and then go on. So you people out there driving these electric vehicle with electric accelerators and stuff like that, that's juice fed with rheostats. If you have a mid-range problem of driving it, then put one of those in. I've fixed four or five of them for guys that just said, oh, yeah, well, that's amazing. They realize that, you know, that you drive them so long you get used to them, and they don't drive like they're supposed to, so you start creative ways of making them run. Well, this is one creative way of keeping it running when you drive it, and it keeps from driving you crazy. Because it'd been doing it for me for, I don't know, probably 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but not enough to get my attention because I'd never had it happen before. But it does happen. So anytime you got electric, you got some kind of stuff. Okay. Go ahead, Jim.
So you're coming back from the White Mountains trying to feather the throttle pedal, right? Because you want to keep it out of the dead zone, so to speak, right? Because if you're thinking about this, the way it works is that let's say the gas pedal is at zero and it has 0 volts, and when you step all the way to the gas, it has 5 volts, right? So it goes zero, half, so to speak, one, one and a half, two, and then it goes to zero again. That's why it dies, right? So Jerry's trying to feather between. I always want to know, how tired were you when you got from the White Mountains to Tucson? So that's the White Mountains is what, 200 and is it 260 miles, 280 miles?
Yeah, I'd say more like 1,000.
Seems like how tired were you driving that way? Because that would be. It seems to me like that would be you would be so exhausted from, you know, mentally and physically trying to keep the pedal in the right spot and trying to, you know, pay attention to everything that's going on the road.
Hey, Jim, it's called gearing. It's called
gearing. Okay.
If you're running something and it's not pulling right, you normally will try to self-diagnose it by dropping a gear, which means you're playing with the RPM now. And then and that's how you do it, coming back. But it's more on the mental than it is on anything else, because you're not quite sure if that thing's going to stay with you till you get back to Tucson, or is it going to quit? So that's the stress point. But if you have one, people, and when I got back to Tucson, you know, I had it figured out by the time I got to Tucson. Oh, I'm just doing fine. I'm just absolutely doing just great. No problem whatsoever. I don't have to worry about it. I feel real comfortable with it now. And I get to Tucson. I pull it into the Simmons Automotive over there and tell Wade. I said, Wade, I need a module for the accelerator. And he says, how do you know? And I said, a guy told me. And I said, and I played with it for the last 1,000 miles trying to get back to Tucson and put it in. I knew it when I got in it to drive it away from the building. I knew that it was fixed because evidently it had been a pain in the butt for quite a while, but you get used to driving this thing, riding it all the time, and you forget what it originally would have felt like. So it's one of those things when it said, when you start making excuses for the way your vehicle is performing, get a second opinion. I don't care if you own a garage. That just means that you're ignoring it, like I did. So, as me and Jim have mentioned a few times, don't do as we do. Do as we say do. We've already tested it. Don't work the other way. So,
well, you know, that's
go ahead, Jim.
Really good advice. It's really good advice, not just for the throttle pedal, but, you know, it's like anything, you know. Oh, the brakes feel spongy. You know, the brake pedal goes down farther than it used to. Well, if you're making excuses for it and compensating for it, probably should stop and go get it looked at. If it used to run, you know, the temperature gauge used to run between the quarter and the half, and now it runs between the half and three quarter. Maybe you should start thinking about that. If there needs to be something done with this. Because just like Jerry just said, things degrade over time, and you start to work on them a little bit at a time. You notice it, but you don't pay too much attention to it. And then you start, you know, making allowances. And an old school experience. I had to pump the throttle 63 times to make it start. You know, today I got to crank it 3 times; it won't fire up. You know, oh, it rattles. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an engine knock, or there's a phaser knock, or there's oil pressure. The oil pressure light doesn't come on, doesn't go off quickly as it used to. Those are things that are telltale signs. You know, that says, hey, look, folks, I need some help. Don't ignore me too long. Because you know what happens?
Yep.
I'm just going to cross my arms and put them across my chest and say, sorry, I'm done. No, you can't make me, and I'm not going to. And then you call me. Hey,
yeah.
My car said it's not going anywhere. You're right. Now we'll make it go. So it's like, you know, it's like the 2-year-old when you say, come over here, and the kid says no, and you go grab the kid and say, come here. You know, that's like me. I just go grab the car and bring it here. Okay, we're here. Car says, oh, can't do anything about that. Physically took you. So, but yeah, just do a little, if you think there's something going awry, you know, before it goes so far south, you know, go seek out some advice. You can seek out our advice.
As Scott Parker would say, just a little bit of maintenance all the time. If you keep it in front of a good garage, and when you go in with your something as simple as an oil service, and if the oil service is done correctly, they will take a look at it. They look for things because they're naturally inquisitive to start with. And, you know, they don't want you having a problem. We don't want you having a problem. I don't want one of my customers' vehicles breaking down on something that I could have found and didn't find. If I find it and write it down, he says, I don't want it. That's fine. You know, we sign off on it. We make sure that he understands. And then that's just education, because as soon as he leaves the shop, he's going to forget about it anyway. And then when you get your next little reminder or things to follow up, it'll be there, and you can, oops, oh yeah. Well, it's still leaking. I'm just putting a quart of oil in it. It's fine. It is until you forget to put the quart of oil in it. And then by the time it comes on, of course, we've got a better notification system now in late model cars than we did in the ones that had idiot lights. I love those idiot lights. And I've seen that idiot light come on people driving. And when it comes on the older cars, you might as well shut the key off, because you're in trouble. And then you call them and tow it in, hope like the devil you didn't tear up something. But, yeah, the idiot lights have been modified. They're much better and more effective than they used to be. And it's just something. On lights, when you come on, we're going to hit a little bit about the lights that come on. When you have a light that comes on, it's in the dash, it's from OBD2 system. It's a notification that the sensors in there have spotted something that's operating out of tolerance, okay? And the way you know how severe it is the light come on, when it comes on, does it stay like, you know, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, 45 seconds, then go off, or does it come on and stay on, or does it come on and blink? Come on and blinking at you. Okay, blink, 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 blink. What's a blink? Of course, people who normally use turn signals know what a blinker is. how it actually, you can tell it's trying to get, it's letting you know it's blinking for a reason.
It doesn't mean the fluid flow, by the way, folks. If the light is blinking, it doesn't mean the blinker fluid is low. Just saying. There might be other low fluids.
Go ahead. Man, Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Jerry brought up a really great point about shops. You know, a shop will check out your car. Most everybody I know, you know, will check out your car. You know, if you go in for an oil service, and they'll check something and let you know. Because, folks, I'm here to tell you, I get to see the cars that fail, right? My job is to pick up the car when it fails completely. Without fail, I can tell you that it happens every single day. I just had them work on it, and it broke down, which comes to the preconceived notion that they must have broke it because it was working when I took it in, right? So then there's always the inevitable question. So tell me what did they do? Well, they put air in my tires. Okay, they put air in your tires, or they rotated the wheels, and now the radiator hose blew up. Yes. Okay, so how are those two related? I don't know, but I know it's their fault. And people in the automotive service industry see this every single day. And I'm always like, well, okay, so I'm not sure that rotating tires and radiator hoses are connected. other than they both belong to the same car. But, you know, how about you get over there and let them take a look at it and see? Because it happens all the time. And so before you jump the gun and go, hey, it's automatically somebody else's fault, because it's never my fault, because the fact that I, you know, drove this thing 200,000 miles and barely and changed the oil once, that's not my fault, right? So if you can't, if there's other issues that are in play because there was lack of maintenance, you got to be a little careful before you just jump the gun and start pointing fingers. And it happens all the time. So most people that on the, who listen to this show don't do that, but I've experienced hundreds, thousands, who always want to tell me that somebody put air in the tire and now the car won't start. I'm like, they're interdependent. They're not connected to each other. Then they both are on the car. Putting air in the tire does not make the car not start. So, but you know, things just occur by happenstance, and you have to understand that.
I know lawsuit that went down. I know of a lawsuit that actually went down on a shop over on the west side of Tucson, and no, it wasn't automotive specialist. And it was I knew the owner. She, since then, has passed away. But and not from that, but, you know, just natural causes. And this is how it went down. The guy took it in, needed an oil change. He did an oil change. He didn't bother checking any of the lights or anything like that. He just did an oil change. His technician did, and then they sent it out. The guy was in a hurry, and so they just sent it out. And, well, he goes out. Evidently, he got a ticket because the brake light or something was out on the rear of the car, one of the little light bulbs. So he goes back into the shop, and he says, I want you to fix what you broke on my taillights, okay? And the guy, he just kind of copped an attitude. The customer had an attitude. The business owner had an attitude, got an attitude from the way the guy approached him on it. And he said, no, I'm not going to fix it. I had nothing to do with that. I was working under the engine compartment back there. There's nothing there that can affect the rear taillight bulb burning out. And... but, you know, we're people, you need to check these vehicles. And had he checked the vehicle out and inspected it, he would have found that brake light is out, and he would have been able to tell that, you know, tell the client, and then the client can make up his mind what he wants to do and stuff. But after that, he did start doing the inspections on them. Makes, as he told me, he said, boy, it sure made the world a lot easier to get along with. I said, well, it's just common sense. To me, it was common sense because I was one of the first shops in Tucson that had a full check sheet. That's how long I've been in business. But that check sheet, you know, we give a copy to the customer. Hey, here it is. You can have anything. Now everything's computerized, but the information coming back, we had the iPads that we tried to use for a while, and I didn't particularly care for them because it didn't have the stuff written down. You know, in fact, I couldn't tell if the guy missed missed an item or anything like that because everything was coming in electronically. And then I was noticing that there were some things that weren't getting checked out on a vehicle because there's about at one time we were up to 102 different locations that we were checking on a car to make sure that everything was checked like it's supposed to be. Now, 102 points on the check sheet takes about 20 minutes of free garage. You go in, you get a check, and it's that. But it's also a 20-minute process. But anymore, if you stay on that, you only have to do a couple of those before people start realizing that you got to stay on top of this. And then they come back, and then it wouldn't take 10 years long because there's no oil leaks. Don't have to find out where it's coming from. There's no oil leak on it now. And it just works a lot better. And it's a healthier, safe vehicle. And then when you get the advantage of that is a reliable, dependable car. better fuel economy because everything's operating like it's supposed to at the optimum, because some of these old cars, you know, if you get 12 miles per gallon, you're doing wonderful. And then some of them can get 15 and 16, and all of a sudden you're getting 12 miles per gallon. And that's time that you should have been looking at it before it actually gas washed the inside of the engine and it gas turns the oil into a cleaner inside and it starts cleaning everything out. The problem with that is gas is not a lubricant. So then you get in there and you got a little issue. But when you're doing these things and do just like Scott says over at Parker Automotive, do a little bit of maintenance all the time and stay ahead of these. Because they're, and people are keeping these cars, the last time was 12.4 years, I think it was, or 12.6 years, something like that. And that is an old number. And with the price of these vehicles going up like 30-35% in the last few years, you're seeing a lot of people that now they haven't taken care of the old car. The car wore out, and so they go in and buy these new cars, and they're going, holy crap, look at the amount. This is ridiculous. Well, you can complain if you want to, but it's just the way it is. And by the way, there's a big scam, online scam, on used classic cars. Used classic cars, guys. So you classic car guys out there, there's a big scam on used classic cars. In fact, I'll take it one further. There's always been a scam online on cars. It's up to you to make sure that you dodge that problem. You know, if you doubt me, I want you to call Dana over at Lynn's Auto Brokers. He's the one that handles the online for Lynn's Auto Brokers. And he'll tell you some things to watch out for. In fact, if I could get him out of bed on Saturday morning, I'd bring him online and would tell you here. But, no, there is a lot of scams going on out there. Talking to my IT guy Wednesday, and he said there's more scams, and they're so professional that he said even he got taken up in one. And it took him probably 10 minutes to figure out that it was a scam. So he said they're getting better and better and better. So when I hear this online scam is increasing, yeah, it's increasing. Okay, it's the way it is. It's just new technology, you know. I'm just hoping that they haven't figured it out yet how to get a hold of the computers in an airplane. Because that's going to be nasty. If they shut that airplane down, I want to see how fast it takes to fire those motors up when you're going down. So a little concerned on that one. And every time I think about traveling across country and using a train, somebody crashes a train. So I'm almost into, okay, I'm going to drive my truck. And that's probably the worst statistics of any of them as far as safety, is me driving across country in my truck. So, but anyway, let's get back to the good stuff. All right, you got anything you want to add on this?
You're right about the inspection list. It used to be, it was pretty simple. You know, you could check you open the hood, you could check the fan belt, right? Because there was one.
Mm-hmm.
You could check the hoses because there was two. Actually, there was four. There was an upper hose, a lower hose, and two heater hoses, right? There was some vacuum lines, and there was the radiator, so you could test that real quick. And then there was the headlights, taillights, and the parking brake. So it wasn't too bad. Today, there's so many systems on a vehicle that do so many things, and so much stuff is, well, let's start with the cover shield that shrouds the engine to start with. You just got to remove it so you can put oil in the dang thing. And, you know, if you want to look at injectors or coil packs, you can't see them until you start removing the shrouds and removing the cover panels. Well, I'll tell you what, that takes quite a bit of time. You on an old car, you know, you could look at the side of the engine and go, oh, look, the valve cover's leaking. Literally, you could see it. You can't see them today. You'll know it's leaking because it's dripping on the ground. You can't see where it's coming from, because it's all covered up with everything on the planet. And, you know, a belt, a water pump that's ran by a timing belt, a serpentine belt that, you know, that goes, that's 43 miles long and it's got, does 83 curves, you know, to fit in this tiny little hole. That stuff is really tough to see and to properly look at it. Now, granted, we don't have a ton of vacuum lines anymore, which is probably a good thing, but there's still one for the brake booster usually, unless it's hydraulic. But see, there's wires. Oh my gosh, there's so many wires. And we're looking at wires now to see if the, you know, if it's been eaten by pack rats, you know, if it's been, if it laid on something and worn too, because, you know, somewhere along the way, the little clip that held it up, you know, got, you know, broke because it was, you know, 300 degrees for 2 years or 5 years, and that little clip broke. The wire fell down. Now it's chafed a hole in it, or it's causing a grounding issue. And you know, this is the craziest thing. I didn't even know this until I started working with newer stuff. You know, magnetic interference can occur just by the thing laying on steel, right? So that wire lays on there, and it starts rubbing, and it creates a voltage, creates an inductive voltage. Do you have any idea how hard that is to find? That's impossible to find, because it's not doing it when it's sitting still. It only does it when you're driving down the road, that intermittent thing. And there used to be, Ford used to have this test back in the 80s called a wiggle test, and it was actually in their flow chart. So you grabbed every hose, you grabbed every plug, and you wiggled it to see if the connection was good, because they were so poor at putting connections together, or the connections were crummy, that you had to wiggle them to see if it works. Well, not so much today. But you know, you get a wire that's not a ground wire that has got a little bit of corrosion underneath it. It will throw your system into an oblivion mode. It doesn't even know. Oh wow, I've seen them where you can break a ground wire and it will not start. A wire not in the, under the engine compartment, a wire in the back of the truck, back of the car, and all of a sudden it won't start. Why? Because something's looking for that ground wire that doesn't come open. I talked about the Ford I had that had the ground wire inside the cab of the truck, and the dome light kept coming on because the little ground wire wasn't tight. So when people are talking about doing a vehicle inspection, I mean, there are so many things to look at today, and you might think, oh, well, and this is no lie. You close the hood, and the ground wire moves because it just is loose enough that it moves enough to make the connection add some resistance. And if you want to talk resistance, call Brian Fuller, because he can talk to you for 5 days about resistance in connectors, resistance on ground wires, corrosion on positive cables. He could tell you forever about all the little issues that go on and what the voltage drop is across the line from the battery to the ECM, and where it should be, and if it's where it is, and if it's too high, whether or not, you know, that's acceptable or not acceptable, what kind of code that will throw, what kind of variance that will add. And don't get me wrong, the car manufacturers know all this stuff, and they build them so they work right. For the most part, you get one that comes out that's done wrong, you're going to know it because it's not going to work right off the bat. But they understand all these things, and techs understand these things too. But just to open the hood and go, yeah, all looks good, and close the hood, doesn't work anymore, folks. It does not work anymore. There's a lot of little things that go on. And taillights, now they're LED. Oh, it's not just a light bulb, folks. It's a whole LED assembly. You know, the light bulb and the taillight assembly are a sealed one unit. No, you can't just go change the light bulb. You got to change the whole assembly. Oh, it's only $700, but I don't want to replace the $700 taillight assembly. Oh well, you know, get the ticket. But it's things like that. Oh, it wasn't the taillight assembly. The connection, the connector was installed, but it didn't properly seat. That happens all the time. It's just stupid little things like that will just drive you insane. So when a guy's, you know, going over the car going, oh, I checked it out real quick, you know, and it looks okay, there could be a lot of things that they didn't see, because literally, like Jerry said, it takes 20 minutes, it takes an hour to go over a car if you want to start wiggling wires and grabbing AC hoses that you can't even see. Oh, by the way, the AC hoses runs right next to, right next to the exhaust manifold. Oh, they put this, little silver heat absorbing, you know, liner over it, because that's going to cure it. Because, you know, going next to the engine with a turbocharger,
the heat shield,
yeah, the little heat shield, the heat sheath that goes over it, you know. Oh, because, you know, because the exhaust manifold doesn't get, like, you know, I know the engine runs at 200, but that exhaust manifold gets way hotter than that. So, wow, the fact that the AC line broke. Oh wait, it's covered in a shield, so you can't even see that it broke, you know, because it leaked out. It's next to the exhaust manifold, so it all evaporated before you could even see it. At $120 a pound for R1234, you know, that's the kind of stuff that when you're dealing with these vehicles, this late model stuff, it can be incredibly challenging. And, you know, somebody rolls in the door and says, heck, even the tire pressure monitoring system, you know, you go in there. What I love the best is, you know, you look at the little tire pressure monitoring system, and they're supposed to be self-calibrating. Okay, you fill up the one and it says the left front is low, and you keep filling it up, and you fill it up, it's not going anywhere. You fill it up, it's not going anywhere. You fill it up, it's not going anywhere. And then you look over at the right front, and it's at 97 psi. They go, wait, how come when I fill the left front, the right front goes up? I don't know. Probably because the sensors are not properly calibrated for the vehicle. Oh, wait, I got to remember to fill the left one to get the right one. Oh, this doesn't work right. How is this? This is backwards. You know, that's the kind of stuff that will trip you up every day. Unless you know exactly what to look for, you're like, oh, yeah, sorry. Let me get the tool out.
Well,
let me jam it in there. Let me go through and RFID each one, recalibrate it. Okay, now it's working right. You know,
Let's talk about tire pressure monitors. When you go in to buy a set of tires and you got the TPS systems on every one of them, you stand about a 50-50 chance of actually having to buy a monitor for a tire while you're there on one of these things when you're buying a set of tires, because sometimes they're just out. Sometimes they're destroyed when you're taking it apart. There's nothing, you know, it just happens. But you talking about adding some money to a tire purchase, I add all four tire monitors to it now. The things used to be fairly inexpensive, and now I don't think they're quite fairly inexpensive anymore, and nothing else on a car.
No,
so
they're not an
just expensive. When you're buying a set of tires, be prepared. If they say, oh, this tire pressure sensor is no good, they're probably correct. And that's another one. Well, it was working when it pulled in here. How do you know?
How do you know?
Did it come on, or do you have a glitch in the system that don't allow it to report? You know, too many little connections in these electric cars now. And, you know, it's too many as far as, okay, what do we do now? How about if you have a battery that's getting tired, and then it gets that little liquid up on top of the battery, and it starts sliding down the side of the battery, and it actually in an area where it can make contact with one of the electrical wires. Well, the acid eats the wire. You can't even see it because it's hidden down beside of the battery box or something like that. It eats the wire, and now all of a sudden you start getting different code set. You can't find it. Because you've never run across that one before, that particular thing, and you look and says, okay, you get battery fluid, and that gets into the diag process, and that gets into the intermittent run until it decides to fail permanently. That's when you'll probably come up with it. But I've seen a lot of them where they just, I mean, the even the book says, just have them drive it until something happens. So I'm going, wow, that I don't care for. I mean, you're not going to make me drive something until something happens. If I know there's a problem, I'll park it in the garage and wait till somebody comes up with a plan. But I'm not going to take a chance on driving it. And the older we get, the more sensitive we get to safety values in a car. when you go in to get an oil service, not an oil change, pull the filter, drain the oil, put the cap back in the bottom of the oil pan without stripping it out, which means you don't use an air gun. Fill it back up. Filter's on. Filter's nice and clean and tight, snug. Run it up and then turn it about another quarter of an inch or 1/8 to 1/4 inch. It's easier to tighten one up than it is to try to take a really tight one off of that thing when it mutilates and you got to chisel everything out. But when you put the on, you fire it up, you bring it up to pressure, you let it run for about a minute to 2 minutes, and then you shut it down and take a look under there with a flashlight or whatever access you need, a mirrors, flashlight, check it, make sure nothing is leaking. And then you slap it on the bumper and send it out. That's oil change. All right? That's a good oil change, but it's only an oil change. A service is where you get in and you check everything. You do a basic check on this thing. Okay, let's find out. We want to keep you safe. We don't want any leaks. You. It's up to you, the car owner. Nobody's holding a gun to your head. But you need to know it. And then say, okay, you check it, you back it in, you say, okay, and you keep looking at this and say, okay, I'll work this in my budget. And if we see something on there that's going to cost you an engine, we're going to tell you about it. It's going to be big, and it's going to be a place for you to sign off on it. I don't need this rear main seal fixed because a quart of oil is cheaper than blowing a motor. Yeah, but if you have to go to Phoenix in that car and you got a rear main seal, it's going to puke it all out before you get there. And you're probably going 75 miles an hour not paying attention to your gauges. And guess what happens? Shut down. Now it's got a lockout, low oil pressure, and you shut the motor down. Good for you. Hopefully it don't blow your motor up. But you're still going to be sitting out on the road calling Frontier Towing to come and get you. Or it ain't going to move.
And it happens.
Just
that.
Oh God,
pressure,
yes.
It happens. Even if I've had them fail, people will call us. They'll be driving along. Oil pressure will drop to zero, and it's all over with the crying. Oh, it won't start now. Yeah, you're right. It's not going to start. It's not going to start out there on the side of the road. Oh, we tried to put oil in it. Oh, okay, what did you put in it? Let's start with that. So. Folks, if you're going back and forth to Phoenix, you know, doing 75, 80 miles an hour, 75, you're getting past. 80, you're driving, maybe you get past, but hopefully, you know, and you're doing that rat race, you get up by Sacatone. Yeah, so it's
all right.
It's a challenge. Any rate, we're out of time. We're out.
Take us out
for the first hour. So hopefully, we'll be back. Well, not hopefully. We'll be back in just a couple minutes after station ID. Come on back for the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk program right here with Jerry and Jim.